We discussed last week a little bit about Avraham Avinu, if you recall, and I want to begin today with a discussion about what you guys are doing in the security force. If someone walks up with a gun, what are you guys supposed to do?
Take cover.
Do you guys have weapons?
No, not allowed in Sweden. So we are telling the others, guy with weapon, they are blocking and closing the entrance. And if it's from the front, to make sure that everyone moves away from that side. Just the back to move.
Okay, and if someone shows up with a knife?
Then you attack.
Yeah?
Disarm fast and not and really hard.
And what happens if you have to kill him in order to disarm him?
You don't. Then he won't get up after Kamaga, trust me.
We're doing Kamaga. Now we're teachers and do their trainers are high mechanics team in Tehran.
Yes.
So our trainers go to Israel a couple times a year to train and then they train us.
People, if they get hit by us, they don't get up. That's how it is. So that scenario doesn't exist. You have to kill them.
Right here.
Unless they're wearing a cap, then we break their nose. That's
huh?
If you're wearing a cap down there, we're gonna break their nose anyway. So one way or another, they're going down.
I hear. Okay.
I hear. We're brutal.
Okay.
That's the way Kav Magaga. That's the fence in the most brutal way.
Now, any of you firefighters? What are the houses made of in Sweden?
A lot of stone.
Stone, not wood?
Wood.
Yes, wood.
Wood or stone?
Wood.
Stone.
In America it's wood, here it's stone. In America, every fire is really dangerous. In Israel, fires are far less dangerous. No, because the houses don't light up.
Not wood.
Yeah. All the buildings made
it's
in
another
50-60
wood. The first floor is stone and the second floor.
Okay. So,
they make you stay in.
Apartments or houses.
Yeah, you're talking about apartments or houses.
Everything is mostly stone.
Bricks.
Mainly stone in Sweden. Tegel. Tegel också.
Du är inte gjort som här utav sten. Då har du varit svinkad.
Nej, men
tegel.
Tegel.
Tegel, bricks and concrete.
Bricks, but that's
wooden
stone.
Bricks. Yeah, wooden.
Okay, so I have a question like this. This is a firefighter. Let's take 9/11. Let's take any regular fire. And he has to go into a building to save someone. Now, he stands there and he asks himself, am I crazy? Why should I risk my life? And the question is, what's the answer?
It
should
yourself.
He? What?
No. Okay, continue.
I think we all value and admire a person who's a firefighter, or you guys might say a person who's a soldier in Tzahal. But these people are risking their lives to save other people's lives. And are we all in agreement that it's admirable? It's admirable that, yeah, everyone agrees? Daniel?
Yeah.
Dan? You agree?
Firefighter,
soldier.
They were the biggest heroes of 9/11.
Oh. So everyone agrees they were the biggest heroes of 9/11. Yeah, David, you with us? You could disagree. We'll just ask you why. What? But then we have to ask ourselves the question, why? Right? Why is that we value them so much?
Because they do what nobody else would do.
Oh, that's why? So we value them just like Evel Knievel?
Yeah.
Yeah, Evel Knievel is also. He says daredevil stunts, he dies a man.
It's the same theory.
It's the same thing, that's why
you
value them.
You jump 500 meters up in the air.
I'm asking, it's not the value of what they're risking their life for, it's the fact that they're risking their life. That's what you're saying. Yeah, that's what you guys really think?
No.
Really?
It's the same theory. Because they're doing something you wouldn't do.
I don't think it's the same thing at all. I think it's a. It's what they're risking for. If a guy runs into a building to pull out his $5 bill, you'd still value him? Wow, he risked his life for $5.
The difference between Evel Knievel or fucking about Steve Irwin.
Who's Steve Irwin?
You know, the crocodile hunter, you know, the one dollar wrestling crocodile.
From Australia.
Okay.
Yeah. But the thing is, the difference between them, but the primary risk in their life to save others.
Oh, so it's the value, what they're risking their lives
yeah.
for. That's what I'm saying.
Evil Knievel is just risking his own life for entertainment.
I agree with you. I think there's a world of a difference what you're risking life for. He disagrees with that.
Yeah. No, he says it doesn't that. But it's a big difference for what you're risking your life for. But you still have the same theory that you are risking your life. You don't admire a police officer is the same. Although he is risking his life.
So what?
Police officer is risking his life
right.
every day.
Right.
At least in the States, not in Sweden anymore. But in the States or in Israel, they're risking their lives. But not in the same way. They have something that they can defend themselves with, and the only thing that the firefighter has to defend themselves with is water, and sometimes that doesn't even work.
Granted, I agree.
So the thing is that you look up to them because they're doing something that probably you would like to do if you're too afraid of doing it. That's why it's the same theory, that you admire them too. Then you have different levels of admiration. Because the firefighters are risking their lives because they want to, I don't know if they're stupid or crazy or masochists or sadists, but they want, some of them say they want to help saving lives, some of them say it's for the thrill. Because you get the adrenaline kick when you rush, when you go into a building fire full of fire, you get like really hyper. Yeah, it's gonna be so much fun. But what I'm saying is that you wouldn't go into a burning house without any protection or anything. You wouldn't do that. Maybe if it was your daughter or your wife.
What if I told you I did?
You did? Like really fire?
What if I told you 20 years ago I came home from Bar Mitzvah and looked out the back window and saw the neighbor's house on fire? Fire. Consumed by fire. And told the others to call the policeman and ran to the house together with two siblings and ran into the house because they had two babies and they left the Hanukkah candles lit.
I would say both stupid and erotic. Like both really stupid. I might have done the same, but it's really stupid running into a house without any
really?
Protection. Yeah, it is.
Okay.
It's stupidest thing you could ever do.
So,
but it's also very erotic.
Let's.
It is.
Okay. You're entitled to your view. I'm not contesting it. You think it's stupid? What? I respect that. I just don't know if I'd want you as my neighbor. But I
just said I might have done the same, but it feels stupid.
So that's the question. Are there things that a person should risk his life? You're assuming that it's only worth risking your life if you have good odds to your favor that you'll.
No, I'm saying.
How you know, like, the neighbors haven't fled already on the other side and haven't seen it? If you're running into a burning house without knowing if they're still there.
That's true. That's true. There's a lot to discuss, but I don't want to go into a specific story.
No, that's like,
I'm
one
leaving
of the
a lot of details.
Could be stupid, like, just yes. run in without knowing.
I agree with you 100%. I agree with you 100%. I agree with you 100%, but I don't want to go into those details of the story then. It's a long story. I don't think it's worth spending the time over that story. Just because he gave the example, so I had a hard time holding back. He gave an example of something in real life. There were two babies in the house. So it's very easy to say it's stupid. The parents made a mistake. They left their Hanukkah candles lit. They assumed it was safe. They went out for a few minutes. The house was on fire. It's a long story. It's not worth the time. Well, two babies in the house who can't get out and you have a fire. It's not so simple to stand out there and say, well, it's stupid to go in because you don't have the protection. I mean, okay. You could say, I mean, whatever. Okay, so let's pause and think for a second. In history, how many people can you think of, Jewish history, world history, that gave up their lives for noble things, that risked their lives for noble things? Schindler, okay.
Wallenberg.
So Schindler, wait. But each one you say, I want you to tell me what they did and for what purpose.
So Schindler's done in the beginning for cheap men.
But it wasn't
cheap, cheap employment. Jews were much cheaper to hire than Polish people. So, and after being influenced so much about it, change started. Completely none of it. English started factory. Started going hire more Jewish workers. They risked his life. Really much.
The point was he risked his life because he built defect bombs that didn't work for the Germans with the labor of Jews.
Okay. Okay. And what was his end?
Since he was a part of the Nazi party, he was a criminal. They had 16 in the
who?
Raoul Wallenberg. He's a Swedish guy.
Yeah.
From Stockholm, from the beginning. He went to Hungary during the war. It was during the war before? Yeah, like beginning of the 40s. And he handed out the fake Swedish passports to the Jews. So they fled to Sweden. And then he was taken by the Russians because he was handling those American dollars, so they thought he was an American spy. And since 44, having no one seen him, he was taken by Russians, so no one knows what happened.
Okay. Who else? So we have two people who basically risked their lives to save other people.
Mahatma Gandhi.
Okay. What did he do?
British without using violence, and I would say the heroes did that the most. He was on a hunger strike, he did a lot just to free India.
Okay, so he gained a better life for people, and he risked his life to gain a better life for people. What other examples? What do you say, Daniel? We haven't heard you.
What was the name of the guy in the South Africa? Still I forget. No, fine.
It's
South
Africa.
You know the guy. That freed the
Nelson Mandela.
Yeah, Nelson Mandela.
Okay, guys, that's as far back as our memories go. 40 years, 60 years.
You want to talk about the value before that?
You want to speak in like the old times? David Amelik, his life, Goliath.
And was that a noble act? Or do we say that's insane? He walked into a burning building without any armor.
No, it was brave.
You can still argue it's brave and it's heroic, but it's still stupid.
No, it's not stupid. What if he?
It is stupid. Whatever you say, it's stupid.
No, what if he didn't do it? Then the Greek would have all of Israel and they would torture everybody and kill everybody.
Because they got to find another way to deal with it. But I'm saying that going into something that is unlikely to be overcome is stupid and crazy. I'm not saying you shouldn't do it. Just you need to put logic in it. He has no armor. He's about the big as his hand, of his fist. David versus Goliath. Okay? He has no armor. He has a freaking stone. Okay? He has a slingshot against a guy with a sword. He just stamp on. Put his foot on him, he's done. He's dead, okay?
But is it stupid for Israel to defend themselves during all the wars?
That was not the subject.
Why?
It's the same subject. No, now it's nowadays and then days. We're defending ourselves like in 48.
Now we're superior.
Who said we're superior?
You are superior, come on.
Just look
not in 48.
We crushed six countries.
Numbers
six
doesn't
days.
Matter. It's
don't
the
say
quantity.
We're not superior.
67 were superior.
You have to look at the quantity.
Everybody thought Israel would die in 67. And then they did it, and it's a better end. It just it would be a better end even if we lost.
Better
than just waiting and die.
Moses, the theory risked his life because he went up to Pharaoh.
Well, he didn't really risk his life because Pharaoh was his brother. So
that's just him.
No,
it
was his brother.
He was his brother,
half-brother, but they still knew each other.
How were they related? Teach me, I don't know this.
Step-brothers.
How were they step-brothers?
Because she adopted him, that's the way he becomes step-brothers.
Yeah, when they put Moses in the cradle and he goes down the river.
Let's start again. Moses' biological parents were?
Doesn't matter biological. Stepfather doesn't have to be biological.
Okay, let's go one step at a time. Moses' biological parents were Jews. Amram and Mary. And Pharaoh's biological parents were not. Wait. When Moses left Egypt, why did he leave Egypt?
Because he was Jewish.
No. Why did he leave Egypt?
Because he killed a guard.
He killed an Egyptian guard,
yeah,
and there was a death warrant out on him. I'm saying, so when he came back, there was still a warrant out for his death.
Yeah, but Pharaoh would kill him.
Why not?
Because you don't kill. You have something emotional with a person.
You have to go have a meeting.
Well, to Pharaoh ruled, he deserves the death penalty. I'm not following him. Just beforehand, they tried killing him.
I don't think he would kill his brother anymore.
But it says that he tried killing him. That's what it says in the Torah. What source do you have other than the Torah about what happened there? Maybe a movie. I don't know. But,
I don't think Pharaoh would kill his brother anymore.
But it says in the Torah he tried. Last week's parasha. Layatzileini
mechere
Pharaoh. I don't know where you guys get that from. I don't know about the cartoons. No, I never saw the cartoon. Nope, never saw the cartoon. Sorry. But I saw the real thing. I don't need the cartoon. But it has nothing to do with what happened. I have the real thing. Remind me, I was once on a plane. And a Christian missionary started arguing to me about different things. Said, what do you do with this verse? I said, it doesn't say it anywhere. He said, what do you mean it says it in Genesis? I said, in the original version it doesn't say it. I don't know what your King James has in your translation, but the original, that sentence doesn't exist. So I open the original, and he opens his King James, and I tell him, okay, let's go verse by verse. Here it says this, here it says this, and here it says this. He says, wait, there are another three verses in between. I go, no, there are no three verses. Here's the original. It doesn't say it. So you guys, that's what you guys are doing to me now. You tell me the cartoon. I have the original. I don't need the cartoon. Let's be realistic. Like, they're taking a translation. You can add whatever you want to the translation, okay? So I can't, you can't hold me accountable to a cartoon. That's not fair. No. You say I should be held accountable to a cartoon. I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's get back to the topic at hand. We said we have Schindler. We have, what was his name?
Raoul
Wallenberg. We have, you said Moshe. What do you say, David? Said Gandhi. Who said Moshe? You said Moshe. David. No admirable examples of people. Who said David and Goliath? Daniel? And you, who did you say?
You want a real hero? Nomi.
Nomi who?
I don't know where that's been. To be able to say.
What was heroic about her? That was Ruth.
The only one is the mother.
Right.
But I mean, Ruth was the first convert.
So what was admirable about her? She wasn't the first convert, but yeah.
She was the first convert?
Correct. She was not. In our parasha, we had Yisro. He was the first convert. But anyways, yeah, let's say. But what was so admirable about you?
That she wanted to follow me. You wanted to follow someone and they got Herzog cell and she said that, like, I don't really remember, but something about three times she said that we have another problem. She didn't care, and she called her and she took on the other.
Okay. So, what do you say, David? Who risked their lives and did something worthwhile? World business. What?
Vad heter motståndsrörelsen innan 48? Motståndsrörelsen här i landet innan 48?
I have a question.
Like Ben Gurion risked his life too. It was like fighting the British.
Oh, I was waiting for someone to bring that example. I was waiting, I didn't...
So they had a much bigger than what there is there.
Okay. So, we're saying that if a person risks their lives, so that's admirable, when it's for an admirable cause. And you say it's provided this ample opportunity that he'll make it out alive.
No, you're not listening to me at all.
I'm trying, I'm listening.
You're not listening to me. You really not listening. You're not listening. Now you have it on tape too.
You want me to shut this?
No, but you're like taking one thing and putting it somewhere else. Like you're mixing up the words, the way I say it. I don't say it's less admirable to go into a burning building than to jump from 600 feet to the Grand Canyon in a motorcycle. But I'm still saying it's stupid to do something we don't know the outcome. It's stupid like shit. Yes, I said that word. Here it is. But I'm not saying you shouldn't do it. I'm not saying I wouldn't do anything that's stupid, because it is admirable and it is worthwhile to save somebody. That's why you look up to them more. But in theory, you would look up to even Cahill, jumps the burning walls, something I don't know what did, because he's doing something you would not probably do. You would, I don't think you would take a jump like that, the fire. Even though you went into a burning building, you're admiring him because what he does. Because you would like to be like him.
Oh, so I would like to differently. I would like to differ with you on that. I think you admire the firefighter because you would like to be like him, because you admire, you'd like to emulate him.
I don't
admire Evel Knievel. I might have respect or not respect, but I don't admire him.
I would like to do the same thing that he does.
Really?
Yeah, of course.
Why?
So
he died that way. Obviously, he wasn't so smart. So what's cool about risking your life for something? For what end? Like Dan said, if there's a purpose, I can understand.
But the...
The fact that he does something I don't dare do doesn't make him more intelligent, more brave. It might make him stupid. A firefighter, in my book, is not stupid.
I'm not saying...
He's risking his life for a purpose.
Yeah, but he has more protection than you do.
So what? But he dies too sometimes.
Yeah, but
he has his life.
But still. Don't do that, everybody dies. I mean, a firefighter, he has training. He does drills. He knows what he's doing. Even though he can't predict that a beam might fall down on his head.
Right.
You cannot predict it might happen to you. It might not have been a today.
Right?
Yeah. But a firefighter would at least had somebody who would have gone in after him.
Fine. Okay.
He knows that. Didn't know that. So that's why I'm saying it's stupid to go in something you don't know anything about, you don't know the outcome. But I'm not saying it's not worth it.
I have a question. Who knows who Galileo was? Yeah, what can you tell me about Galileo?
Nothing.
Huh?
It was Italian, right?
How did he die?
He... Didn't he blow up his kidneys with that guy? Was it someone else?
I don't think so.
That was someone else telling him.
Okay. So I have a different question. How did Avraham Avinu die? Was he killed? Or did he die a peaceful death?
He lived to be
alive. Died a peaceful death. You guys know the story about Avraham being in the burning furnace? They tried to kill him, throw him into fire. You don't know the story? Okay, Avraham Avinu's his father used to sell idols. You guys know this?
Yeah.
Okay, you know that one day his father put him in charge of the idol factory? You know he bashed up all the idols and said, the big one did, right? This much you know. And then you know he was brought before the king named Nimrod. And Nimrod said, what you doing, son? And Avraham Avinu said, well, I don't believe in all this, it's nonsense. So Nimrod said, you choose an idol, you bow to it, otherwise I'll kill you. The rest of the story you guys remember now? Avraham Avinu said, okay, what idol should I bow to? So Nimrod said, bow down to the fire. So Avraham said, I can't bow to fire because water puts out fire. So Nimrod said, okay, then bow to the god of water. Avraham said, I can't bow to water, the clouds carry water. So Nimrod said, bow to the clouds. So Avraham said, I can't bow to the clouds because, let's start again. Nimrod said, bow down to me. So Avraham said, well, if you fall to the fire, then you should get burnt, right? So I can't bow to you, you're human, fire can burn you. So he said, bow to fire. He said, I can't bow to fire, water puts out fire. Bow to water, can't bow to water, clouds carry water. Bow to the clouds, can't bow to the clouds, the sun, the wind moves the clouds. Bow to the wind, can't bow to the wind, man stands up to the wind. We've come full circle. So Nimrod says, well, son, you choose one idol you bow to, or else we have a furnace over there that you have to stay away. You can't even come close to the furnace, it's so hot. They have a big, big, big fire. Either you bow or we're throwing you into that fire. And Avraham said, I'm not bowing. Avraham had a little brother named Haran. Now, Haran already had kids, so they had to be a little bit older than three, even though the story goes that Avraham must have been three or five. And Haran said, I wonder what's going to happen. They asked Haran, are you with Avram or not? Haran said, I don't know, we'll talk. Let's see what happens to Avram. Avram told Avram, we're throwing you into the fire. What, you believe monotheism? Avram said, yeah, I do. So they said, well, will your God save you? Avram said, I don't know if he will or won't, but I know he can. I don't know. Now, God had never spoken to Avram at that point. Avram was believing in a concept that the whole world disagreed with, and God hadn't spoken to him. It's not like he had prophecy, or he had a Torah, or he had parents who were religious, or who brought him up to this. No one did. And they threw Avram into the fire, and he walked out alive. So that's why Nimrod got the nickname Amraphel. Amar Vehipil Savram. He said, and he threw Avram into the furnace. And when Avram walked out alive, his brother said, well, I'm with him. So they threw his brother into the fire, and he burnt alive. God doesn't make miracles like that. So you ask yourself, wait a second, Avram. God never spoke to you, and your parents didn't teach you this way, so you were willing to give up your life. He didn't know he'd walk out alive. You were willing to give up your life for what? For a concept which you felt was important for the whole world to know. So now you guys, I thought you knew the story. Now you know the story. This is a story that a lot of kids hear as children. Now you know the story. What do you think? I want to take you one more step. We have a challenge in our society today. It used to be pretty clear, right? You kill a person, he's dead. And everyone knows that you're not allowed to kill a person, right? That's pretty basic. The Torah tells us you have to rather give up your life than kill someone, right? What mitzvahs do we have that a person is supposed to give up his life rather than transgress? What do you say then? The three commandments the Torah says you have to give up your life for. What are they?
Sorry. If someone tells you to kill someone, you don't.
They put a gun to your head and say, do this. We say, all the Torah you should do. Anything they tell you to do, don't give up your life except for three things. You don't know. David, what are the three things?
I just said one.
So he said one. He said, you're not allowed to kill someone.
No. And then, if someone is pointing a gun at you, tell them, if you don't kill him, I'll kill you. Then you don't have to kill someone.
Right?
And you should die.
Right?
Or.
What are the other two?
Or.
I forgot.
Okay, so these three are pretty basic. And they take us to the roots of what it means to be Jewish. These are three things that the Torah says you'd rather give up your life than transgress. One, we understand murder, right? Is that clear? Make sense? So I want us to focus on that one for a minute.
Yeah, adultery.
What?
Adultery.
Oh.
And breaking Shabbat.
Not breaking Shabbat.
Is that the prophet?
Nope, not breaking Shabbat. We'll discuss the third soon. Let's go together to a concentration camp. And there's a young girl who has a job where all she makes is enough to put a little bit of bread and butter on her table, and she's not in the concentration camp. But her job, her office, overlooks the concentration camp. And what she started doing is every day at the end of her lunch break, so she takes the scraps of food that are left and she throws them out the window as though she's throwing them to the garbage. But really, they're falling down into the concentration camp and children come and collect it in the room. And she starts thinking to herself, you know, I have to spend extra money to buy all this extra food which I throw out at the end of the meal every day. And she sees out of the corner of her eyes little Jewish children coming and collecting their food. And she asks herself some questions. She says, well, maybe it's better for them if they were dead. And maybe they're going to die anyways. And maybe this is a horrible life to live in. Should I be spending, I have such meager means, should I be spending extra money on keeping them alive? It's not easy. And sometimes it reaches a point where she can't buy herself an extra blouse for Christmas. She can't go to the parties of New Year's. She can't do what everyone else is doing in town because she's spending whatever extra money she has to buy herself a bigger loaf of bread, to buy herself more food so that she could throw it out the window at the end of her meal. And she sees out of the corner of her eyes how the kids come scramble collected. And she doesn't think she's risking her life. She doesn't think anyone could blame her for what she's doing. But she keeps asking herself, should I do it? Why should I live my life this way? Why should I spend my money for it? Maybe their life isn't worth living. And at the end of the day, I live too. So what do you tell her then? Why should I ask you? What do you say, Dave? What do you say? Ellie?
One side, like, we know people survived, so afterwards we can say, yes, you should do that because people survived. But during the moment, and that's the situation she was that year, you cannot know if any Jews would survive and it was worth it.
If you so if they didn't survive, it wasn't worth giving them food?
If you give them food, but, I mean, she will look at it as, why did I give them food? They died anyway. Then after they bought my New Year's dresses and I went to the parties with all my friends. That's her opinion. Could have been. But also she saved, maybe they lived longer, thanks to her as well.
So there's no value to life of the moment? There's no value to
yes, that's the same.
Doing our best to keep them alive?
That's what I said, that they were still alive.
Isn't it a question of perspective?
Yeah.
Meaning, shouldn't we tell a woman like this, why don't you think long term? How much is that dress going to be worth for you in the long term? And how much is a human life in the long term? And that's what I would want to tell this woman. Stop, get perspective. You could save a human life. And when we say that God created the world with one human being, right? So the Talmud says, why did God create the world starting with one human being? Why didn't God create a family? We say Adam and Eve. Why? What was the concept of creating one human being? To teach us an important concept. That the whole world, everyone you see all around you came from one human being. To teach us that every single one of us is like a whole world. It's not an individual you're saving. Chazal tell us that there was once a man in charge of the charity. His name was Binyamin HaTzadik. You guys know the story? A woman came before him and said, it was a year of drought. There wasn't a lot of food. Not a lot of people donating money. She came and said to him, I have a bunch of children that all I need. You got to help me out. I'm a widow. So he said, I'm sorry. Our fund is empty. I have no money to give you. So she said, I don't even have the strength to go home. I'm here for 2-3 days. We've almost eaten nothing. And my children are on the verge of death, and I'm on the verge of death. You can't just tell me, go home. I have no money in the fund. So even though he himself didn't have that much to give his family, he supported her that day and the next day. Till the drought was over, he supported this widow and her children. And a short while later, he became ill. He was a young man, and he became deathly ill, and they were already getting the coffin ready. It was clear it was over. The man had, let's say in our terminology today, he had metastases all over his body. It was over. So in heaven, there was a ruckus. The angels came in and they said, look at how many lives he saved. This widow and her children. Every life he saved is a whole world he saved. You taught us, God, by creating the world with one human being, that every human being equals the world. It's not one person. How could you let him die at such a young age? And God said, you guys are right, said to the angels. And they added over 20 years to his life. For every human being he saved, they added a number of years. Because every human being is a world. It's not one person. So I would like to tell this girl, you know, it's not one human being we're talking about here. It's a world. And you don't know what tomorrow brings. Right now you save the world. Every day you save the world. That's what I would also say to a firefighter.
But then you have another concept. Selfish.
That what?
And you're saving life because you're going to live longer.
I didn't follow. No, not for herself.
No,
because of the intrinsic value in that human life.
Because of that value, of course. Then you might have to see the other aspect. Not many people are as enlightened as you are for saving a life in a whole world. They would see the other point. That, oh, we're going to gain a few years. Let's save 100 lives. I will live to be 100 years.
I didn't follow you.
You can follow me again.
Right, but I'm trying.
If you're going to say like this, if they know, let's say that it's 100% sure that God did not. The angels told God, he said, okay, when life is saved, let's extend his life. Okay? So let's say that a normal person knows that even though you don't really intend to do a mitzvah, just guys follow me, okay?
I'm with you.
You're not intending to do a mitzvah, but you're still doing it. That's why it's called Ma'aseh B'Mishma. So that means that you're still fulfilling the mitzvah. Okay? Which means that although your intent isn't to save the children's lives by helping them give you their food, if you're thinking more about your own life, you'll extend your own life for years. Because God will see that it doesn't matter, because I'm still saving their lives, but I'm not doing it for myself.
Okay. I hear you're saying sometimes a person could have in mind what will get out of it.
Of course.
Yeah, I want to take you one step further. I got a phone call the other day. A guy calls me up. He's been listening to classes online. He and his girlfriend, officially they're good from Orthodox people, but right now she's pregnant. And if she tells her parents that she's pregnant, so they're going to flip out. They're going to disown her. On the other hand, I mean, there's a baby in her. She's already a few months pregnant. And his question was, what do they do? What do they do? I want you to think a little bit.
Since abortion isn't an option, so you're killing a life, according to Jewish law at least, then she has a baby. Even if you'll be a monster, you don't have
to be a
monster. You will be, you're not married, it's not.
Even if they're not married, it's not a monster.
Of course it is.
Sorry.
Until they're married.
Nope.
But no.
what can I do? You want me to show it in Shulchan Aruch? I'll show it.
So what defines a mamzer?
Mamzer is one who is born from a prohibition that is a prohibition of pares intrinsically, meaning if one had incest, one married one's sister, one went with a married woman, one went with one's mother, anything that falls under the prohibition of kares, that the Torah says that is not only prohibited, but the punishment is kares, then the child that comes from that is a mamzer. But
there's no problem.
I didn't say there's no problem. I mean, they did do prohibition, but so the child will not be a mamzer. So, let me ask you a question. If any one of you could convince her not to abort and to have the child, and if you think about the story about the girl in the concentration camp, maybe you can see connection. Meaning there's a certain price, but let's think long term. What's going to happen from there? If any of you could convince her, so think about it, then maybe we'll set up a meeting. I think it's much more convincing if you have someone who's from a similar background. If I walk in with my black kippah and my beard and title rabbi, it's not everyone wants to listen. If you walk in and your name is Dan and you're in jeans and you have a necklace, then it might be more convincing. So think about it. Think about it. Now, I want to end off with two thoughts. One, would it be worthwhile to volunteer in an organization that helps girls who have children out of wedlock, or who say we have to abort because we can't afford to have children? I mean, there are people, just like that girl in the concentration camp said, I don't know if I'm going to have one less dress. And so why should I throw out these morsels of bread to the children down there? There are also girls today who say, I won't be able to live the lifestyle I want to lead monetarily. I'm gonna have to be so tight if I have a baby. Diapers cost money, and fresh wipes cost money, and baby food and formula cost money. There are girls who want to have an abortion because of that. And the question is, what do you tell them? Or can we help them? And
you just have to show first that what life really is about.
Oh, so what is life really about?
You have to take them out to what I would suggest, take her out, just walk through the city, randomly chosen people. Just tell her, okay, pick that guy. Just now say to me, what do you think he does from morning to evening? What is his life about? Is he going up? Is he waking up at 7 o'clock? What does he sleep? Does he have someone to wake up to? Doesn't he? Is he going to breakfast? Is he going to make someone happy today? Is he going to make someone angry today? Is he going to make a new friend? A new enemy? What is his life all about? What is he going to do? He go to the next one. You see a couple. Why are they happy? Try evaluate why they're happy. Analyze why are they happy. What do they have? Maybe they have a child. Maybe they're not married. Why are they still happy?
I want to raise a few points which I think we could surmise from everything we've been discussing. I think there is something admirable about bravery, but bravery that's foolish is not admirable. We could argue about that. That's my opinion. I think that there's an intrinsic value to life. The Torah teaches us life is not just about when you're happy. Even a child in a concentration camp that we don't know if he's going to make it out or alive. So you guys value, what was his name? Raul
Thalenberg.
Even though he risked his life, he might have suffered and died, and he risked his life to save people who might have suffered and died and didn't make it either, or Schindler. But there's intrinsic value to life every moment, and the Torah teaches us about the intrinsic value, and the Torah also teaches us about risking our life for that value. And we opened up a thought in the direction that there's also value to risking one's life for other things, not just for saving a life, but like Avraham Avinu, for a principle that changed all of humanity, that got people to stop burning their children as offerings to all kinds of idols, people thinking, well, that's the way this God wants me to live my life. And Avraham Avinu risked his life and was willing to give up his life for a principle.
And the Torah also demands of us that we won't give up our lives for a principle, the principle that God is singular. Meaning, if a person is given the choice to bow to an idol or give up their life, the Torah demands of that person to be willing to give up his life on that principle, just like Avraham Avinu did. So we still have to talk. We've only touched on two. And we touched on abortion with the direction of, I want you guys to think, what argument, what are you going to tell this girl? What could you tell this girl? And we might be able to arrange for you guys to volunteer in an organization that actually helps these girls. In an organization, I mean, sometimes the guy disappears from the scene. She doesn't even know who the father is, or the father wants to have nothing to do with it. He says, you don't want to have an abortion? It's not my problem. I don't want to have the kid.
I actually wrote a philosophy essay on the meaning of life.
Oh, I'd love to read it. Do me a favor.
I translate it.
So I want.
I can translate it in there. It's not so long.
You could probably use Google. Google has translating function.
Yeah, but maybe I wrote it in English.
I'd be very interested in reading it. So, think about it, because it's a direction I want us to move. But I thought that our first class, when we were starting now, I see the end in sight. So I feel like, okay, you guys might be leaving us like shortly. We got 6 weeks left. What's that? We're already, or 5 weeks left. We're already, a third of the program is finished. We're almost finished. So there are a few things I want us to walk away from this program. I want us to understand the basic values of Judaism. I want us to also understand what is valuable in life, for our own lives. Not only Judaism, wait a second, but what is valuable? And we began our discussions a few weeks ago with the discussion of what morals are right, and how that can affect everything we do in life, and now we're seeing some applications of that. If we don't have morals that are defined, so then when push comes to shove, are we going to be those people who do stand up to the test of life? Or are we going to be that girl who says, well, my Christmas dress is more important? So, maybe we should conclude with the story. No, say that, enough said.
But this organization,
I'm thinking, we'll see, I don't know. I'm thinking of going on a trip, maybe volunteering, helping out there, and maybe seeing what they do. But I want you guys to think about it before we go.
Maybe you should let us talk to them instead.
Okay. Sit.
One by one. They tell their stories. We might be
in here.
Because we don't have a we don't have like a deep insight of religious way of looking at it. That might help them more to see why they should, like, where they should keep children, where they should keep on going on. Because most people, when they're in trouble, they look for religion, but sometimes religion might not be the answer to all problems. For a human being, it's hard to believe that just have faith in God and everything will solve.
No one ever says that. No true. Let's put it this way. Judaism doesn't say that.
No, but that's the way. It is in a way. It does in a way. It does. It says everything God does. Right? Which means.
What does litovah mean?
Good.
What does litovah mean? It doesn't say everything is good. It says litovah.
For good.
What does it mean, for good?
What do you mean, for good? Translate it.
I'm asking you, what is the word for? It doesn't say everything Hashem does is good. It says,
it says for good.
What does the word for good mean?
It's
more complex than that. There's a big machloket understanding that line. You're quoting a line as though it's simple. It's not simple.
Yeah, but it is. For people like me, people like them, probably if they're not religious, they know they take the world the way it is, and that's why it's easier not to involve religion sometimes.
Well, are you?
I'm serious.
I know you're serious. I didn't think you were joking.
Because religion has. Every time you're in trouble, most people would say, help me God. Or in front of just a test. Does God help me when they pass this test, or when they are in grave danger of their life, they say, help me God. They would say, thank you God, if they would come out of their life. Thank you God, for making a test, a striving test. But they're not really realizing that they're thanking God. Because God wasn't the one that drove the car that was trying to hit you. Or the person, if God has a free will, that's the way God created us. To say, thank you, God. So why do we thank God? What did he do? Did he do anything at all? Or he just hugged you? So by putting religion aside, it's easier to say, okay, you will let me.
Nothing. Let me tell you something. A lot of people who speak the way you do, so they themselves are in that situation. And a person can say it's a moment of weakness, but I will say it's a moment of truth. Just like the moment the baby is born, he knows he exists. He doesn't need any classes in theology or theory or philosophy to know he exists. The first thing the baby knows is, I exist, and I'm hungry, and I want to suck, and I want to eat, and I want to live. But the same token Hashem created within each person, a core deep down inside of him that knows God exists. Because that same life that knows it itself exists is a part of Hashem, it's the Neshama. So a person can play a game his whole life. He could stand and dance and say, I don't know, maybe, maybe not, because he's in a physical body that wants to do physical things, and at the root of everything is the fact that he wants to live like an animal. He wants to party like an animal, he wants to have promiscuity like an animal, he wants to do everything like an animal. That's why he keeps covering up that core knowledge that's within him. But beyond, let me just say a sentence, beyond all the theories, beyond all the claims and philosophies, at the end of it all, deep down inside, the same way a person is born with an internal knowledge, I exist, he also is born with an internal knowledge, God exists. And sometimes, when push comes to shove, he's willing to recognize it. Because he, when his life is at risk, so suddenly he says, wait a second, everything's nonsense. Life is what matters, and God, help me out. And then when he's out of danger, so it's more comfortable, more convenient to ignore God, to say, well, it was luck, he was pulling the trigger, you know, a lot of answers. But that's not what's really going on inside of us.
I mean, if God created us physical beings, then
officially we're old.
Yeah, but I'm ready to come now.
I'm with you.
God created us physical beings, right? So he gave us all the means of living a physical life. So how can he expect us to live a spiritual life? If he knows, if God knows that we would much, much rather live a physical life, a spiritual life, with that I'm not talking about say not davening or not saying thank you for the food and bachot, blessings. I'm not talking about all these laws, talking about how not to be. I'm not sure I'm getting quite myself. Wait, there's ways of behavior also in Judaism. It's a concept, it's not a law, right? It's
more to be discussed than
that. Yeah, but I haven't heard that it says in the Torah, you should not touch. What we're talking about today, I touch right now. I don't think you can tell me that there is a place in the Torah. In the written Torah, don't tell me rabbinical. I want to talk about
it. In Shuma, yeah, but you're trying to conquer all of the Torah on one foot.
No, I'm not trying to conquer all the Torah. I'm just trying to set it in the beginning. I have so many things that I'm going to do right now.
I'll tell you what we should do. And I did this with a few guys. It really helped both of us. Let's communicate either via email or with letters. Write to me what you think or what your challenges or questions are, and I'll respond. You respond to me. We'll be much clearer to both of us if we write. I'm serious. It'll just take me forever.
Yeah, but you're gonna know what to say.
You're talking is the same thing, but it focuses our thoughts also.
Yeah, but then I really have to focus. Like, I really have to.
Right?
No, but if I'm gonna write, I really have to. How do I say? Pinpoint it into one corner. I won't be able to philosophize. Do what I'm doing right now.
Well, now you're talking and you're not even sure, you're forgetting your starting point.
Yeah.
And then when I respond to one point out of four, you already attack my response and I never get to respond to the other four.
And you throw 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you say a bunch of things, and when you finish speaking, I have a bunch of replies. But I don't get through one, because we're already on to the next. So to an extent, if we really want to get to the core, to the bottom of things, let's put down our thoughts and think them, and we'll deal with them one at a time. That's the real way we want to deal with
them. I'm sure that's the real way, because I like more talking than writing.
Okay.
I was saying, okay, the first point was actually that I don't, God created us physical beings, right? We can feel physical things. That's why it's called physical beings. You can touch, you can smell, you can smell, you can see, you can taste things, you can touch things, you can see things. God gave us the human as well. What I'm saying is that if you wanted to create us more of a, you could have made us angels instead of people.
Oh, why did he create us human?
Because he wanted us. That's the question. Why did he create us human? If he doesn't want all the problems that we've created, if he already like tried to kill us a few thousand times, and we had this so the human helped us save the world, then because he went, it might be like he's playing a game. It feels like that sometimes. He's playing a game. Should I kill the storm or should I not kill the storm? Find me some people. Like, he knows. God already knows Abraham is going to say those words. Because he's almighty, right? That's what we think. He's almighty, right?
I'm with you, yeah.
So he already knows that Abraham is going to tell him, no, I'm going to find 50 righteous people. Okay.
You have to understand, and what you've said already, there are a bunch of points
that
deserve a response, but I can't respond that. You said a bunch of things. You're asking if God knows what's the purpose of life. You're asking why did God create us physical? Why did God give us free will? Why did God create us angels? Those are all different questions, and they deserve their own answers. But I'm going to start with one. You already
start.
Go.
No, start. I'll be quiet.
It won't work.
It will work. Start. Starting with the spiritual, with the physical world. Why did He make us physical?
That deserves a longer class first introducing me. So the first point is that whenever you ask why about God, you're not going to have an answer. You could always ask why to more meaning. I was talking with my 5-year-old son, and I told him, come, let's walk on the sidewalk. He said to me, why? And I said, because the car's driving the street. And he said to me, why? And I said, because the street was built so that cars could drive on it, and the sidewalk is where people walk. And he asked me, why? So I said, because cars are wider and they are more powerful, so they go in the middle, and we can manage on the side. So he said, why? So I said, because human beings made them that way. So he said, why? So I said, so more people could fit in the car. So he said, why? So I said, because more people fit in the car, that's all purpose of a car, you can get places. So he said, why? So I said, because people want to get places. So he said, why? So I said, people want to accomplish certain things. So he said, why? So see where we're getting? And every answer you give, you could always ask, why? Wait, you're always going to reach the same endpoint. The question is just how many whys will you pass? Eventually, you reach the endpoint where you say, because God created us that way. And then, we'll say why. Meaning, every question on the planet, if you keep going why, you're going to end up with God, because God created it that way, and then you're going to ask why.
Maybe, can I intervene?
I'm with you.
Maybe that's the easy way out.
If it's true, I don't care that it's easy. My goal is to be truthful,
yes.
Not easy nor hard.
Maybe it is the easy way. If I explain that you're God Almighty, you can talk to him. Sorry, sucker. That's the easy way.
Okay, so you take any question and you show me a better answer at the end of the day. Why do you see with your eyes? Why do you wear glasses, Abba? Because I want to see better. And why?
To go back to your son.
Yeah.
Because when he grows up, he will understand why.
At some point, whatever you understand, you could ask why about. It's just you understand more levels before you hit that final why.
Yeah,
it's just a question of how many levels.
The first question, why would you lock him in the sidewalk? Yes, why? Okay, you said the cars go in the middle. Why? In the end, he will know why. He will understand the logic.
Even that logic you could ask why about. There's nothing you can't ask why about.
You can't. That's the meaning of logic.
Why do cars hurt people when they hit us? Because they are solid and the law of physics. Why does that law of physics work?
You don't have to go into that deep level because you already know it hurts you.
That's very nice, but the deep level still exists. The fact that you could placate him and avoid that deep level doesn't mean you haven't entered it. But you see what I mean? We're getting sidetracked. So we're entering a whole different discussion, which is not our discussion, which is what happens all the time. So it's a fun thing to do on a Shabbos afternoon, but we're not getting anywhere. No, that's not the point. I'm just saying, it's like, at the end of the day, you're always going to reach the question with, why did God do this? Why are you sitting on a chair so I shouldn't fall on the ground so I could sit comfortably so we could talk? Why? Because this is what's comfortable for my bones. Why? Because God created my bones in a way that's what's comfortable for me. At the end of the day, you're going to hit a point where every question, if you ask enough why, you end up with God. So you might say, well, you don't need to ask so many whys. Fine. But at the end of the day, that's where you're going
to
end up.
But you don't have to say God created this way.
Oh, so you could say nature is this way. We are this way. And he'll ask you why.
Then you say as nature.
And he'll say why.
But
I didn't understand that answer. I'm sorry. See, what you're doing is, you're instead of God, you're saying nature, right?
Yeah,
you're
but
in the same nature.
Then your son wants to go, why should I go ask God?
One second, wait.
Why should I go ask God?
Did I say he should ask God? I'm saying, you said that's answered to him.
No,
I didn't say it's answered to
him. But if you're saying...
So
if
I say...
If you said, nature created us, okay? Let's say that way. Okay, fine. He'd ask you why. But that's the same thing as going to say, God created us that way. A why?
Oh, so that's exactly where we're headed.
That was the first question. Why did he create us as physical
beings? Oh, so that's my point. That every question could end up with the question, why did God do it? Every question. And we have to understand that there are two levels of answering that question. There's the true, in the true sense, and in that sense, so if God didn't tell me, I can't know why he did something. And then there's an aspect where we say God wanted us to have a certain element of understanding as to what's going on this planet. And so God gave us a limited understanding of why he did this. But we have to understand that it's limited. That's my point. Before I answer you, I want us to understand that whatever answer I'm going to give you is limited, because only God could tell you why he did something. And God says, you won't understand me. I can't give you a complete understanding. I created you limited beings. You won't understand me completely within your framework, but a certain understanding I can give you. So we have to understand we're working within a limited structure. We're human with our limited capacities. And whatever answer I'm going to give you is limited. That's just an introduction. I didn't give you an answer. I'm just saying all questions will end up with this question. Why did God do this? And we have to understand that all answers are going to be limited. Fair enough, Adpo? Give me one second. Hey. Just one.